Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Get the Table, another wrestling roundtable discussion podcast with myself, Adam Wilborn, and the Dudley Boys of What Culture here to discuss another burning wrestling issue. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, more roundtable discussions like this one, and a round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflet and Cedric and Gents, we are gathered here today to predict the AEW Revolution 2022 card. It goes down on March 6th, though. We are just over 3 weeks away. Sitch, how are you feeling about it?
Oh, I've been hyped about different AEW pay-per-views in the past to a much bigger level than this, if I'm being perfectly honest. It doesn't help that the main event doesn't have enough juice yet. It doesn't help that a certain grudge match, which we're going to really revel about talking, has far more heat behind it. And the title pictures elsewhere are not exactly clear. Certain grudge matches underneath are starting to really heat up now. I can't tell if it's just been a lackluster period of AEW television or if we're just not being patient enough. I guess next week we'll really answer that question. But for now, let's do that job for them.
Yeah, I don't want to undermine the content we're about to produce, but it's not actually an ideal thing to still be so speculative about a pay-per-view 3 weeks away. It's a very WWE thing. It's been normalised by the opposition at very least. But typically, especially when you've got such a long cycle of Dynamites between the quarterly shows or however many they are a year, you shouldn't really have so much of the card, not unknown, but like still very theoretical. Yes, there are some really cool, meaty things that we're going to get to dig into here, but a lot of it is open-ended. We're going to try and speculate and predict based on educated guesses or on the likelihood of pairings at this juncture. But I can't remember a time where it's felt so open-ended for so much of the card. I think this just speaks to some of the criticisms of the last couple of months of AEW being valid. The sense of a bit of a lack of focus, a slight taking of the eye off the ball. I don't think we'd be here had those things not been true.
Let's start with the title matches then, Sid. Fairly obvious, especially following Dynamite this week, that we are getting Adam Cole challenging Hangman Page. How do you see it playing out?
I called this one several months ago, actually, not to be a complete dickhead about it, but I did sense that this was going to be the direction. I didn't think they would take this long to arrive at it. Ultimately, at this point, I'm not as high on the prospect as I would have been had you told me this was the direction following All Out 2021. It's a great match on paper. It's one we haven't seen yet. They've got like a really interesting, but like not a shared journey, but a very similar one. I think there's lots to play with that they've not yet really begun to explore. They've done the hard job. They've firmly established Adam Cole as a pay-per-view level headliner by virtue of his winning streak. But in typical AEW fashion, and I'm a fan of this, he's had a really sprawling path where it's incorporated Orange Cassidy. A lot of the intrigue in terms of his character progression pertains to the Young Bucks and his potentially taking over the Elite from Kenny Omega one day, all of which isn't Adam Cole versus Hangman Page. We've only just sort of settled on that direction as of this week, and it was intimated last if it wasn't quite obvious before. This is a really long-winded way of saying they need to juice this up. They can do it in the classic ways. They can get their various bodies, in terms of Adam Cole, as various like sort of goons, if you like, to start just beating them up, getting some heat on Adam Cole, making it look like he's got no chance of winning with the constant threat of interference. You can bring in former associates of Hangman Page to sort of settle that up and create a ripple effect on the undercard. But for now, it just doesn't feel on that like intangible, I can't wait for this level, like a proper headline worthy main event. I've got no doubt it'll be exceptional. Long as well. Adam Cole likes a long match. But I'm not too excited about it at present.
I think they're going to get there with this eventually, although there is, I guess, not much time to do that now. I do expect the benefit of only having sort of three Dynamites left or three Rampages or whatever is that you can kind of do a beatdown, a cool, maybe face-to-face promo segment of some description, and then a video package. Let's just say, hypothetically, you've got each of those three things and all of them can be effective in their own ways. But I sort of mentioned this on the Dynamite review when it came to Cole and Page facing off for the first time. Something they can do with the Hangman Page storyline, and especially using Adam Cole, is suggest that he has had to become what the rival is in order to retain his title. So he's had to effectively become the perfect professional wrestler over 90 grueling minutes with Bryan Danielson, and then he had to become the perfect Street Fighter come bloodbath guy, Texas Deathmatch guy with Lance Archer in order to win that match. Adam Cole will, as he is a student of the game, will have looked at those two things and should project onto Hangman Page his inner weaknesses. He should project onto him that, well, I'm a bigger star than you'll ever be. You should feel panicked. Just because you could be a barroom brawler, just because you'd be a wrestler, it doesn't mean that you're a star. When I walk out, all I have to do is say my name and a building goes wild. When you walk out, are people even bothered that you're the champion anymore? What's cool about that is that not only does it sort of undermine Hangman Page's confidence, but it implies that Kenny Omega was beaten by a guy that wasn't even a star. And a lot of Adam Cole's long game is gradually booting Kenny Omega from that catbird seat in the Elite. So I think that they can play with what, in Cole's mind, will be an obvious difference, but in the fans' mind, and it's something that AEW critics have said before. Remember when Danielson and Punk and Cole and all that was happening? Everybody's forgotten about Hangman Page. He comes out, huge bops. Sets pay-per-view records with Kenny Omega. Like, all the stuff, all the objective evidence is there that Hangman Page is this beloved figure. But it makes sense in Cole's mind that he would rationalise, you're just not on my level. And you kind of get Page to prove it all over again. The smart way to book Hangman Page is proven to be, pretend he's still chasing. He's got to beat Bryan Danielson. He's got to survive Archer. Now he's got to prove himself against Adam Cole. That seems to be the strategy with how you get this babyface to still... He's not as hot as he was going in against Omega, but like, how will you at least mirror that run-up to the pay-per-view?
From the men's to the women's world title, Britt Baker just run through almost everyone, though.
Yeah, the Britt Baker-Thunder Rosa match is just one of those wonderful exhibitions of, we say this a lot now, the let-it-play-out philosophy actually being brought back by AEW because you can't apply it to WWE anymore. You'll kind of have your heart broken or you'll be let down or whatever.
Yeah.
The lights out stipulation, as used quite cheekily recently with Adam Cole and Orange Cassidy, was exploited to absolute perfection when it came to Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker's lights out match last year. Britt Baker was given the beating of her life, but like all great beatings, the loser got over and she was able to go on and win the AEW title. In the meantime, Thunder Rosa has been the unfortunate one to just find obstacle or just find sludge to swim through that stopped her being able to get to this. She's been the wrestler Britt Baker has initially, like on the sly, tried to avoid and is now doing it overtly by paying somebody to come in and take her out of action, to beat her, to knock her down the rankings, to do everything she can physically, mentally and emotionally to stop her getting the match. The fact that Thunder Rosa will overcome not just the obstacles from the last year, but this last obstacle in the form of Mercedes Martinez to get the shot, tees it up perfectly as well. And because the original match was so great, there's already precedent that suggests that this is going to rule on the night.
Could this be the moment that Britt Baker loses her title for usage?
I would say so. It's gone on for quite some time. I don't think there's much room with which to manoeuvre at this point, hence why we finally arrived at the Thunder Rosa rematch. And if you look at the work that they've been doing in conjunction with building Thunder Rosa very quietly, Hamflet makes a great point. Like, let it play out is a value in AEW and it's a meme in WWE. Because if Britt Baker drops the title, Thunder Rosa can do X, Y, and Z with it, but they've already been quietly building stuff to do with Britt Baker when she drops it, and the Jamie Hayter thing has been teased ad nauseum at this point. She could initially portray a heel and just blast Mercedes Martinez for failing to do the job she was paid to do. They could have a match. Nothing to do with Rebel. No offense. She's great as like a second, but I don't really want to see her in a singles match. I don't really want to see her in a trios match. And that's a weird booking device they resort to at certain points. But there's loads of stuff left to do for Britt Baker outside of the title picture. And if you want to be lazy about it, and sometimes AEW is, you can realistically just do very easy title match booking. It's the easiest sort of thing to book, but they've been doing the hard yards, like, sort of in the meantime.
In terms of the tag titles, Jurassic Express are a team who constantly defend those tag titles, and yet, in terms of picking a pay-per-view opponent for them, you're kind of spoiled for choice.
Yeah, this is difficult because the team I really want to see face them at the pay-per-view, I want them to be the new champions, and it doesn't really feel like this Jurassic Express title reign has gone on long enough for it to feel like it's going to be of any benefit to what it's ultimately about, and that's the rise of Jungle Boy. I really like the idea of long title reigns. I think there's certainly a value in subverting that with a shock switch every now and then, but I really like the value that a long title reign has. Now AEW holds it quite dear. It builds prestige. It creates the idea that once you win this, it's not just a free pass to book acts. They continue to put in the work, and the longer that the reign goes, the harder they seem to beat, which informs the accomplishment of the next team who beats them. So I really like that.
Are they trying to fast-track that by having them doing lots of defences, do you think?
Well, that is a good point, and it's one that potentially might hold true. It still feels way too soon for them to drop the titles. I've been enjoying them, but they're not. The quickest way to find out who is a star and who isn't in AEW, where titles actually mean something, is to put a title on an act, because the second you see the titles on Lucha Bros and Jurassic Express, you think, that's nice, but it's not the Young Bucks.
Yeah. Mm.
It's not Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. So I do worry about the long-term title reign and how much it's ultimately going to mean, but I do think they deserve a crack to go a little bit longer, which kind of makes this difficult. I want a House of Black or the Kings of the Black Throne, mm-hmm. whichever one way round it is, to ultimately beat them. I'm just in love with that act. I think they hold incredible potential. So I wouldn't do that just yet. I've had an idea for the longest time, and it's kind of a cheeky way to book things, but you get value all around. FTR are currently ranked. I know they've just got beat, but they can just, you know, it's AEW. I'm not being funny. They can go on dark for 3 weeks and get back at number one. It's like, oh, we're number one. I like the idea because FTR are so great, and they have such great chemistry with Jurassic Express in particular, of them going on to Revolution. Doesn't seem necessarily like viable now that they've just lost to Mox and Punk, but they can lose and lose and lose these big title matches. One day, turn around and say, we've not been the same since Full Gear 2020. Let's go and chin the Young Bucks. That's what we need to do. That's where it all started going wrong for us. But if it's not FTR, and it's not the Kings of the Black Throne, I don't think it's the Young Bucks either, because I've got another idea for them. Mm. I'm stuck. Hamlet, help me out.
Well, to be honest, I would have said the Kings of the Black Throne if it wasn't for the fact that honestly saw them losing the titles as a result of maybe Christian turning on Jungle Boy. This idea that what had once been this, obviously, you know, apprentice relationship with mm-hmm. the two of them has gradually turned where Jungle Boy doesn't need Christian's tutelage so much anymore. Christian gets wind of that. You like draw that out a little bit, but the teasers just haven't really been there. If anything, Christian's been doing the arrogant stuff to the other teams in the field, and then Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus have been beating the teams and yeah. proving him correct. It's not been one of them things where he's been talking them into trouble. He's been talking them into matches, but they've won the matches. They've not really had any struggles. The one that felt as if it was actually going to lead to a divide was the Dark Order, and that's only because they were baby faces, and you kind of don't want to see Christian negging other good guys. But in terms of fighting, you know, the Gun Club or whoever, it's just been other heels, other loser teams for the most part as well, that they've kind of had to not fudge the numbers with, but just boost them because of the January reset. For me, it's like, I like FTR, but a little bit for the wrong reasons, because I too want the House of Black to win those belts. I love that team instantly. They feel yeah. like a proper big deal. The titles feel like it'll legitimize the act as it still sort of grows within AEW. So I would go with FTR, but it's, again, it's for the wrong reasons. It's because they're there to be beaten for the time being. Mm-hmm. And that's not really, we're not watching that as fans. You kind of tune in as analysts to say, this is going to be a bit of a rub. This is going to be a credibility win for Jurassic Express when they need it, rather than just being able to invest in a story that feels particularly earned.
I suppose the saving grace you could do there, if FTR are in the title picture and lose, is, and I just keep saying this until I will it into existence, FTR are down in the dumps, they've lost, and if you don't go, which I really like the route of the Young Bucks as well, but if you don't go in that direction, Briscoe's debut on the pay-per-view, and then people go, oh, don't care about the records, I just want to see these guys fight.
And, you know, like that sort of thing, like let's say, for example, they're licking their wounds in the ring, lights off, lights on. This is very Tony Khan, it's very AEW, it'd create a moment on the pay-per-view that people would remember. You can't rule stuff like that out if they're just looking for a quick way to get FTR on the next thing.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In terms of the other titles, TNT title, Sammy Guevara holds, of course, at the moment, and the TBS title, Jade Cargill. Do you see them being defended on this show? Is this the one where Jade Cargill faces Nyla Rose, a more sort of higher level opponent? And Sammy has obviously got the face of the Revolution match to determine his next opponent, but does he defend on the show as well?
Yeah, I will say this for AEW. They've at least, even if they've not been so overt about it, I think they've at least shown you glimpses of the possible matches if you're going to put these on pay-per-view. Nyla Rose for the TBS title feels just right. They've just lined up a couple of wins in line with the fact that she's been like really funny.
Yeah.
And I don't like sort of say that in a trivial way as well, in a way that she's adding stuff to her act as well as improving in the ring. The title run was necessary when she first had it because she was a kind of a big original star with AEW, and it was important to give her a run and help her try and legitimize the belt while the belt legitimized her. Subjectively, it worked, but you know, I don't know if people remember that too much. Mm. Now she feels like she's actually grown into becoming a mainstream television star. And I think the Jade Cargill match would represent the functioning meritocracy that AEW tries to uphold, the idea that somebody has put together wins, been given deserved placement on television, and then gets a shot. In stark contrast to that, because they kind of just do that with the men, I was shown a glimpse of Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara, and it immediately made both men feel more important. Them coming face-to-face when Darby Allin made the save for Sammy on Rampage made Darby Allin versus Andrade look pedestrian television filler and made Sammy Guevara just for a second look like he might have a legitimate title challenger on his hands. It made me realize that nothing they're doing is becoming of pillar behavior. Again, ever since it's been canonized, I actually think it's done damage to these two in particular, and I would love to see them prove themselves as pillars on a pay-per-view in a title match and probably elevate the prestige of the TNT title in the process as well.
I love the idea of the pillars. I don't disagree necessarily with my esteemed colleague's statement, but what happened to Revolution 2020? Sammy Guevara had a match with Darby Allin. I love the idea of them running that back 2 years later when they've both really have advanced.
Yeah, boys to men stuff in it.
Absolutely. I love the idea of the contrast on that specific stage, how it brings into focus. Not only is it cool that these two guys have ascended and isn't that like a reward for your long-term investment as an AEW fan, but it kind of, in an indirect way, lets you know, like, Jesus Christ, if I invest in, like, Daniel Garcia and Lee Moriarty and Dante Martin now at Revolution 2024, they could be fighting for these belts. And it's just really, like, deft, like, long-term booking is a tapestry and not just in this individual program. I don't know where it goes. I can kind of see, genuinely, given how stacked this show could potentially be, as we'll get to, the TBS and TNT titles kind of being treated as television titles and not being defended at all. And that's one route they could take. There's nothing that screams out for me on the TBS side. I've been a fan of Cargill's run. But the problem with booking such a one-sided domination run like this is who's really a credible challenger at this point? Tay Conti, potentially. Run back Red Velvet, I'd like to see that. But it doesn't necessarily, in the nicest way, scream pay-per-view caliber. But, you know, a five-minute match with one great hope spot. Like something like the Anna Jay versus Cargill match would be great at a pay-per-view because I totally over-delivered, but there's no real guarantees of that. So I don't know about the TNT and TBS title matches being defended at all. They could maybe do a bump of Dynamite before or after, like really pushing those titles.
Yeah. In terms of the TNT title, though, of course, we've got this Face of the Revolution ladder match. One name already in there, Keith Lee, their newest arrival. Who else makes up the field for you? Well, and who is the face of the revolution?
Well, this is bizarre. Well, not bizarre, but it's complicated because it's sort of a lot of different strands are kind of diverging outwards now. Like the Darby Allin Andrade thing makes me think, could they just be, because they'd be incredible in a ladder match together, so could they be involved in it alongside Keith Lee? We've seen Wardlow mentioned by MJF as you need to go and win that TNT title. You could be the face of the revolution, and then you give that to me. So that's four potential names if, in fact, they don't run a TNT title match. And from there, it's just kind of a pick 'em. Who's a guy that you don't want to push just yet, but you want to give a iconic highlight reel spot moment to on the pay-per-view so people will remember it and think, it's like a clue almost over who to invest in because, again, your investment actually means something. It could pay off down the line. When they gave, like, Jungle Boy music, licensed music, everyone thought, all right, it's worth tracking him throughout 2021. And lo and behold, he had, like, an absolutely terrific breakthrough year. So the problem is that there are simply too many wrestlers in AEW at this point who are worth giving such a spot to. But off the top of my head, like Dante Martin in a ladder match.
That's what I was thinking.
Terrifying as it would be, mind-blowing, inventive, creative. Genuinely like the scope for a seminal moment involving Dante Martin. So he's my pick. Hamlet, what's your?
I would love on the Dante Martin front or like Dante Martin adjacent type wrestlers, I would love Daniel Garcia to not particularly want to climb a ladder to get his success, but to get it anyway, to do enough of the like breaking of the bodies on the ground floor before then climbing the ladder.
The old Dave Taylor.
The old Dave Taylor grabbing the Sonic ring at the end and just being like carried out by 2.0. Like they fight, like the three of them deserve a win somewhere down the line. It's obviously going to come for Garcia rather than it's going to come for them. So the idea that they get that. My big pitch for this. Because
I'm in love with Keith Lee, by the way. He should win. I fell in love with him all over again.
It was great. It was just so, and typically as well, the title match is just for a TV special a few weeks later. So what they've established there is the opportunity for somebody that maybe you wouldn't expect to win, to win. So if it was a Wardlow, you know, in reality, that's only feeding into the next angle. It doesn't mean the person that wins has to win the title. This is different narratively from Money in the Bank, isn't it? It comes with a different expectation. My favourite choice for this, maybe not to win it, but certainly just to elevate this match on the night. 1 year on from the night when it really, when the boos became clearer than ever, is Cody Rhodes signing his contract on a condition that he has entered as the last man without having to qualify as the face of the revolution. Not only would it be yet more fun dickhead stuff from Cody, but it almost speaks to the, it actually almost applies some logic to that insane promo he cut in front of a ladder, no less, where he kind of resented other people for being the face of his revolution. You know, guys, can't we just give some sympathy to the bank? Like, this idea that, like, this is what he's kind of owed after last year's. You know, I would have won it last year, but I was injured. Am I right, guys? Looking on just more booze upon booze upon booze. Sort of perfectly in keeping. There's not a lot else for him to do on this card. I don't know that there's truthfully a lot that people are shouting for him to do on this card. Yeah. But returning from this awesome ladder match to just enter another one to get another run at Sammy, I think it's quite funny. Like, Keith Lee could pounce him and then all of a sudden, and like out of the ring.
Absolute hero's reception.
Enormous pop for that. Cody goes flying. You've taken the threat of Cody winning out the way and you've potentially built Keith Lee and Cody as a feud going forward. It's Cody stuff that he could set up a million angles with everybody in there if he's in it.
I really like that. The only thing I would add is, so we've got Keith Lee, Wardlow, Darby Allin, Andrade. I'd make it a seven. I'd make it announce six, and then on the night say, ladies and gentlemen, I've just been informed there's a seventh entrant, and then make it Cody just for the heat. But I'd have my other two people be Dante Martin and Powerhouse Hobbs, so I can have a moment between Keith Lee and Powerhouse Hobbs, please.
The Joker is always something to consider. Oh, yeah. We haven't considered that. It's a good bullet point for the copy to get there. What about Johnny Gargano as a Joker?
Oh,
I'm
yes.
I'm fairly certain that Candice LeRae, Johnny's not been doing anything naughty, I don't think. Candice goddamn Ray, Jesus Christ.
Due this month, yeah.
Due this month.
Yeah.
So, love the idea. Bad work. Bad work for
well, it all depends
day.
How much the baby's sleeping, doesn't it? We've lived that life. It's like, I'm really sorry, work's on the phone, I'm going to have to go.
It's a very, like, misogynistic thing, realistically. Say, oh, yeah, he'll be all right. Bad work. But, like, the first month of having a child is incredibly intense, so his performance level might not be great, but at the same time, you kind of want to break. very intense.
We are so pitching.
Like, oh, I love the idea of like, oh yeah, I'm so like knackered and exhausted with this baby. I need a break. Do you want to really hurt yourself in a ladder match? Yep.
We're pitching a multi-man ladder match on a pay-per-view as Johnny Gargano's first full night's sleep in a month.
Now, the Young Bucks were conspicuous by their absence, as you mentioned, in terms of the tag team title match. But you think there's some other things they can do on this card?
Yes, absolutely. They did intimate on Dynamite that they were after the titles again, so that could allude to the fact that they're going to be working Jurassic Express at the pay-per-view. They had an absolute banger on Dynamite in the summer. It was one that led to the cage match. What an incredible match that was. So they could run that back. If they don't, a great potential pay-per-view opener would be a 10-man tag. And I'll tell you how I'll book it and why. Adam Cole versus Hangman Page is obviously your main event. Mm-hmm. I think the true drama in how Hangman Page could drop that title, it doesn't really seem viable or feasible yet, but the way to make you think that it is would have Adam Cole call on the help of the Young Bucks and Red Dragon all at once to put the heat on Hangman Page and weaken him ahead of the pay-per-view. And there's intrigue there because stemming from the events of Full Gear, the Young Bucks are kind of like, it was a tacit respect. Not going to no longer mess with his shit because, one, he threatened to kick our ass, and two, have we kind of got a begrudging respect for him now because they thought our dickhead tactics didn't really get as far against Jurassic Express and Christian.
Is the Elite still alive after all? Yeah.
After all of that. So the idea is that there's loads of potential tension in Matt and Nick Jackson accidentally costing Hangman, whether they want to cost Hangman, whether a miscommunication, accidental or deliberate. There's loads of way to pile drama on that main event. So to build it, you do that. Obviously, Hangman Page is still loosely associated with the Dark Order, who can be brought back into the mix. And a big staple of AEW storytelling is factions, fighting factions, and the factions of the people in main events that do supplementary matches to build them. That could sprawl out to the opener, like an insane Young Bucks multi-man with Jay White, the Young Bucks, and Red Dragon versus Uno Grayson, Silver Reynolds, and Cabana, or 5 or 10, or whoever. Mm-hmm. In an exhilarating Young Bucks special could feed into the main event. If there's a miscommunication between the Bucks and Red Dragon, that could feed into their major match deeper in the year. There's loads of narrative possibilities to play with via the vehicle of just an insane, exhilarating multi-man opening sprint.
In terms of other exciting matches, is this where we get Jericho and Kingston and maybe even Moxley and Danielson?
I think you could do both. I would expect at least one of those. It was odd. We're recording this just after the Dynamite where John Moxley stood in as CM Punk's partner for the night, and that was a pause on the pretty cool story they're telling with him and Bryan Danielson.
Which is going to be followed up on Rampage, if I'm not mistaken, I believe.
Danielson talks.
So by the time people are listening to this, there may have been the revelation of the dojo, the Dragon's Den, or whatever it's going to be.
Yes.
I like that so much. With only 3 weeks left, I'm not opposed to getting past Revolution. However, it does sort of feel like it was there designed to drop in on that pay-per-view. So I would expect that. There's going to have to be a lot of acceleration to get there. Unlike Jericho Kingston, which I think is just about pitched perfectly as long as Eddie Kingston's fit and good to go. I think they've done a really great job with the Inner Circle split. I'd like to think that they've listened to the responses to both Jericho and Kingston separately and together and pivoted from that very first night when the commentators were instructed to say, why is Eddie Kingston so annoyed with Chris Jericho? It didn't feel real. It felt like it felt like Michael Cole bollocking you into feeling a certain way about the wrestlers, and that wasn't how anybody felt. And I'd like to think that the listening company have done it yet again and have, as a result, pivoted to this Chris Jericho heel turn. Everybody's listened, in fact, Jericho included, and has spotted you are going out there to die if you expect to get cheered against Eddie Kingston. CM Punk didn't manage it. What chance have you got? So you get this match. From the very beginning, we all looked at this with a bit of a wry eye of this not being so much about Jericho giving somebody the rub as it was about getting one himself. Dare I say, with him as a heel putting over Kingston, he might do it after all. You kind of can't argue against Eddie Kingston yet again circling that AEW world title if he defeats Chris Jericho on pay-per-view. This could end really, really well.
Finally, Sige, there is a match with a rematch, presumably set for the pay-per-view, that you've been calling for from arguably the moment these two really started getting together, CM Punk and MJF I'm talking about. And it's a stipulation match that is becoming more and more clear as the weeks go by.
Yeah, no, I predicted it months ago. You might think I'm an unbearable smug tosser out there on the YouTube comments. Couldn't give a toss.
Who else has won?
Roddy Piper.
Exactly. I've noticed they've been dropping. They obviously have a shared admiration, hero worship of Roddy Piper. They're both incredibly influenced by the man. So it's no sort of surprise that they've each been like sort of saying, oh, you're no Roddy Piper, or I'm a better Roddy Piper than you, in their promos. But if you add that, the repeated Piper references, like nothing happens on this show by accident. It's total nerd fodder, and I'm a total nerd. They've been dropping Piper references frequently. Apologies to the mega fans, because I've been saying this quite a lot, but I'm certain it's building towards this. If it isn't, I'll be kind of pissed off at this point. The repeated Piper references. What was Roddy Piper's most famous match before he did? His most famous match outside of WWE was famously a dog collar match with Greg Valentine. So that, combined with the fact that MJF has been repeatedly running away, they didn't even touch, was it the Christmas special?
Yeah, the six-man tag, yeah.
Yeah, so they didn't touch once. The whole idea is that up until very recently, MJF has been literally running scared like a dog from CM Punk. So that, combined with the Piper references, the fact that it needs a stepped-up rematch, like the babyface needs a fair fight where the guy simply cannot run away. He is tethered to him. I just think they're having a dog collar match. It's something that AEW's only done once, so it's not an oversaturated gimmick. It's double juice mayhem potential. Like, CM Punk's really good at fighting. Not real fighting, but he's really good at emulating fighting and struggling. I just think it would be a perfect stipulation for the pair of them. I think they've been building to it from day one. If you look at the actual first match they had on Dynamite, the tape around the neck, I think that imagery was very much on purpose. I forget the follower on Twitter, apologies, but they mentioned that the scarf around the neck of MJF before he slipped away, that was sort of potentially foreshadowing this match that I've been basically calling for months, and I'm going to be annoyed if we don't see it. An alternative suggestion, people said a cage match. They've only done one singles cage match, so that too is special, but I just think the Piper fandom will inform the actual stip.
Yeah, love it. I've adored it since hearing it as a pitch for the first time. It's a feud that, and I've been critical of this with AEW lately, it's a feud that actually warrants the big double juice, gory fight to the death sort of thing that they've bastardized a little bit, but this feud has earned it. CM Punk has earned this against MJF. You know, he's earned this revenge. MJF is brilliant at taking these beatings when he absolutely has to. They've dragged it out brilliantly. And as we've said all along as well, the whole thing, somehow this dream program between MJF and CM Punk, this class of ages, has been a Trojan horse for the Wardlow babyface turn.
Yes.
So as the rest of the story has been, it can be there existing for itself on the night and yet existing for something entirely different, for yet another tease of, you know, will this be the night? Will this be sort of what we think is going to happen again because of the passing of the ring the first time? Will it be something but the other way next time around? The fact that that can just hang in the air while we get a dog collar bloodbath is inspired and is the reward that this program has deserved. This feud, let's be honest, like, the Adams in the world title match are going to struggle to build in 3 weeks to build something as prestigious as what this is going to be on the night.
Yeah, can't wait. Really hopeful for something like that. But let us know your thoughts on everything we discussed and your predictions in the comments section below. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, of course. Plus, you can let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch that. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
You can order Sidgwick's brilliant book, Being All Elite, Becoming All Elite even, The Rise of AEW on Amazon. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. But for now, this has been Get the Table. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.